Good morning. As Mike said, my name is Alexander Hildebrand. I'm a senior at Johnson University. I'm studying Bible and theology, youth ministry, and preaching. If you do not know me, I grew up in this church, and it's played a huge part in making me into the person that I am today. So it's a great privilege and honor that I get to preach here this morning. If you'd like to turn to the passage that we're going to be talking about today, it's Daniel 4. But before we do, I'd like to ask a question. Who is in control? And what I mean by that is, who ultimately is in control? Of the world, of you, your family, your direction, your life path. Who is in control? For King Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 4, he has an answer to this question. And his answer is himself. And rightly so. He is the king of the Babylonian Empire. He is the ruler of the majority of the known earth. He has an unlimited sense of power and authority. If he wants something, he can have it. If he wants to make a law, it will be done, and anybody who breaks it will be punished. There is nothing that Nebuchadnezzar cannot have, and there's nothing that he will not take. See, he takes great pride and joy in his kingship. He takes great comfort and luxury in his amount of power and authority, and he uses it to build himself up. He uses it to have the most pleasure and joy, the most sense of respect and honor that he possibly can. His kingship is self-absorbed. He's not concerned with his people, but he's concerned with himself and how great he can be. Remember, this is the king of Babylon who built a golden idol of himself and made all of his subjects bow down and worship it. This is the king of Babylon who would go and would conquer nations and bring all of their people to him. This king has an unlimited sense of power and authority over the majority of the entire known earth at that time. King Nebuchadnezzar is rightfully in control. But that wouldn't stay the case for very long. As you see, one night when King Nebuchadnezzar's asleep, he has a dream. It's a very vivid and lucid dream in which he sees this grand tree, this beautiful, majestic work of art. It's a tree that's so large and so grand that it reaches to the heights of the heavens. Its branches cover the entire earth. Every creature, every beast lives under or in this tree. The tree is so great that it provides food and a home for everything that lives on the earth. It is a masterpiece, and it is the grandest thing on the earth. But then, an angel from heaven comes down, a messenger with a proclamation. And it says this, starting in verse 13. Then as I lay there dreaming, I saw a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven. The messenger shouted, "Cut down the tree and lop off its branches. Shake off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Chase the wild animals from its shade and the birds from its branches, but leave the stump and the roots in the ground, bound with a band of iron and bronze and surrounded by tender grass. Now let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him live with the wild animals among the plants of the field. For 7 periods of time, let him have the mind of a wild animal instead of the mind of a human. For this has been decreed by the messengers. It is commanded by the holy ones, so that everyone may know that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world. He gives them to anyone he chooses, even to the lowliest of people." It was a dream that greatly distressed King Nebuchadnezzar. He knew that it had a meaning that was directed towards him. But he didn't know exactly what it meant. So Nebuchadnezzar, greatly distressed, dripping with sweat, tried to make his way through the rest of the night. And the first thing he did in the morning, as soon as the sun came up, he summoned every magician, every enchanter, every wise man to his court. And he told them the dream. He told it to them, expecting them to be able to interpret it, for them to be able to tell him its meaning. Unfortunately, not a single one of them could. That was except for Daniel. And upon hearing the dream, Daniel too became distressed because he immediately knew its meaning, and he knew that it was ill news for the king. In fact, Daniel became so distressed that the first thing he said to the king was he wished that this dream was for the king's enemies as opposed to him. For it wasn't good news. And then Daniel began to explain the dream to King Nebuchadnezzar, starting in verse 20. He says that the tree you saw was growing very tall and strong, reaching high into the heavens for all the world to see. It had fresh green leaves and was loaded with fruit for all to eat. Wild animals lived in its shade and birds nested in its branches. That tree, your majesty, is you. For you have grown strong and great. Your greatness reaches up to heaven and your rule to the ends of the earth. Then you saw a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven, saying, cut down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump and the roots in the ground, bound with a band of iron and bronze and surrounded by tender grass. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the animals of the field for 7 periods of time. This is what the dream means, your majesty, and what the Most High has declared will happen to my lord the king. You will be driven from human society, and you will live in the fields with the wild animals. You will eat grass like a cow, and you will be drenched with the dew of heaven. 7 periods of time will pass while you live this way until you learn that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world and gives them to anyone he chooses. But the stump and roots of the tree were left in the ground. This means that you will receive your kingdom back again when you have learned that heaven rules. Essentially, what Daniel is telling the king that his dream means is this. It's twofold. First, you are going to go crazy. You, the great and mighty king who's in charge of everything, who has an unlimited amount of power and authority, you are going to be driven from your kingdom. You are going to go mad. You are going to lose everything, and you will live alone in the wilderness, eating the grass like a cow. It's a pretty bold statement to tell the guy who can kill you with one word. But the second thing he tells King Nebuchadnezzar is that the dream means this. You're not in control. It's God. Essentially, God is working in Nebuchadnezzar to make this exact point, that he's the one who's really in control. And it isn't Nebuchadnezzar. It's him. And immediately following this, Daniel says to the king, almost pleading, almost begging, please, king, turn away from who you are right now. Recognize that God is in control, that God is the ruler, and stop sinning. Stop being an oppressive king. Love and serve the people who are under you. Don't make laws that are unjust. Instead, develop a kingdom that benefits them, that helps them to be the people that you want them to be. And the king heard this, and he understood it. And thankfully for Daniel, he wasn't angry, he wasn't upset, he didn't order that Daniel be executed. But unfortunately for Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't really follow through, he didn't really listen to what Daniel had to say. And about a year later, Nebuchadnezzar was out on his balcony, enjoying the fruits of his ruleship, being so self-absorbed, so prideful, he looked out over his entire kingdom, and he said, look at what I have made. Look at my kingdom. This is mine, and it is developed because of me. And at that moment, the fulfillment of the dream came to pass. And Nebuchadnezzar was stricken with madness, and he was driven away from the kingdom, forced to live alone, eating the grass like a beast of the earth. You see that God worked in Nebuchadnezzar in this way, because Nebuchadnezzar ultimately failed to do 3 things. The first thing that Nebuchadnezzar failed to do is he failed to recognize that Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, the one true God, was indeed the one true God. And we see this all throughout the book of Daniel up until this point. We see it in how Nebuchadnezzar named Daniel. He named Daniel a Babylonian name, Belteshazzar, which is actually named after one of Nebuchadnezzar's false deities. We see that when Nebuchadnezzar describes Daniel, he describes him as having the spirit of the holy gods within him. Not talking about the one true God, but talking about a multitude of deities. Nebuchadnezzar isn't willing to accept the fact that there is one true God. And he doesn't really have an excuse because this isn't his first interaction with God. Nebuchadnezzar has been the king of Babylon for all of Daniel up until this point. He's seen God work on behalf of his people when they stood out for him. He's seen God work on their behalf when some of them were thrown into a fiery furnace. He's seen God work in them when Daniel has interpreted dreams for the king before. In every single instance that God has worked in his people have intentionally made it seem that it was not them doing these great works, but it was God. It was all God. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't have an excuse to not accept this, because this isn't his first interaction with God. This is one of his several interactions with God. The second way that Nebuchadnezzar failed is he failed to understand that God is the ultimate ruler and authority. And we see this just in Nebuchadnezzar's own self-absorbed kingship. We see this when the angel makes a proclamation in verse 17 when he says, "For this has been decreed by the messengers, it is commanded by the Holy Ones, so that everyone may know that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world. He gives them to anyone he chooses, even to the lowliest of people." Nebuchadnezzar believed that he was king because he deserved it. He believed he was king for his hard work, by his own hand, for what he was born into. He couldn't accept the fact that God had put him there, that it was because of God Nebuchadnezzar was king. The third way that Nebuchadnezzar failed is he failed to live in accordance to God's nature. Essentially, he failed to be the king that God had called him to be. He failed to be the man that God had called him to be. He failed to lead with love and servitude. Instead, Nebuchadnezzar was an oppressive king, living for himself, taking anything that he wanted, making any kind of law that would benefit him or give him more honor or respect, at least in his own mind. He was failing to be the man that God had called him to be in that position. And it was God who appointed him to that position. But thankfully, that's not the end of the story here in Daniel chapter 4. No, after 7 periods of time, the rest of the dream is fulfilled. Nebuchadnezzar is given back his sanity. He returns to his kingdom and is able to return to his kingship. And he does so with a changed heart and a changed answer to our question. Instead of thinking that he is the one in control, he recognizes that it really is God who is in control. And when he returns to being king, he does change. He praises and gives glory to God and recognizes that Yahweh, the God of the Hebrew people, is the one true God. And he praises God for the work that he had done in Nebuchadnezzar. He praises God for everything that had happened to him so that Nebuchadnezzar could come and experience God and his greatness and give glory back to him. It's a happy ending, but it's unfortunate that Nebuchadnezzar had to go through that. Anytime there's any sort of or discipline or negative experience that enters into our life that shapes us, it really is unfortunate. But often what happens at the end is greater than the unfortunate circumstances that occur. But unfortunate for us, a lot of times we find ourselves in the exact same position as Nebuchadnezzar. Maybe we're not the king of Babylon, and we're not being driven insane to the depths of a beast. But when we're asked the question, who's in control, and we answer it with complete and utter honesty, sometimes we give Nebuchadnezzar's first answer, then a second one. Sometimes when we look at our position in life, when we look at the job we have, when we look at our family, when we look at our church, when we look at our community, and we look at the people around us, we can well up with pride. We can think that we're really the ones who are in control. We can think, I worked hard to get here. We can think, this is all mine. This is all for me. We can well up with pride and self-absorption like King Nebuchadnezzar did, and we can fall in the same way that he did. I mean, think about this. Think about every position that you hold. And I don't just mean in the workplace, where a lot of us work, but think about your job, think about your family, think about your friends, all of the relationships you have. Think about any kind of community or group you're a part of. If you're in school, think about where you are in school, what class you're in. For every single scenario of our life, we hold a certain position or we're in a certain situation. And we have to recognize that for every position or situation, God is in control. And not only that, but God appoints us or allows us to take those positions or to be in those situations. Ultimately, God calls us to do two things: to recognize that he's in control, that he has put us in a particular place, or he has allowed us to enter into a particular place so that we can grow not only closer to him, but closer to each other, that we can be the godly people that he's calling us to be in that particular place, in that particular position. We have to recognize that, and we have to change our perspective from ourselves, but to God and to the people around us. Maybe it isn't an issue of pride that a lot of us go after, or that we feel when we look at our position. Maybe instead, it's grasping for the sense of control. Because a lot of us feel the opposite. We don't feel secure in control. We don't feel like we have this power or authority in our various positions. We feel the exact opposite sometimes. Sometimes we're doing everything we can to maintain a sense of control, a sense of order in our life. And the real issue with that is it's, again, all about us. It's everything that we're trying to do to grasp onto control. It's everything we're trying to do to grasp onto the sense of order in our life so that way it can be exactly how we want it to be, and it can be stable exactly how we want it. But the issue with that, again, is that God is in control. And he doesn't want the life for us that we picture in our own heads. He doesn't want our life to be wrapped up with the picture that we create for ourselves, with everything that we want. Instead, he has a grander and a better picture for us that isn't wrapped around ourselves, but it's wrapped up in his will. It's wrapped up in drawing closer to him. It's wrapped up in loving and serving the people around us. As God appoints us and allows us to take positions or situations, whether it's good or bad, whether you recently got promoted at your job, or your family's going through a crisis, whatever position or situation you're in, good or bad, God has appointed you to it or allowed you to take it. And he's calling you to be a godly person right there, right now. He's calling you to come to him, and he's calling you to love and serve the people around you. King Nebuchadnezzar was in the position of king, and God had put him there, and God called him to be a godly king, to look at him and to give him glory and praise and to rule with the kind of love and servitude that God naturally takes on. God did the same thing with Daniel when he appointed and allowed Daniel to be taken away from his home, to be taken into Babylon, to be raised and put into the servitude of the king. God appointed and allowed him for that to happen. And he called Daniel to be a godly man, to do the will of the Lord, to love and serve the people around him. Both Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel were appointed and allowed to take their respective positions. The difference was that Daniel recognized that God is in control, and he lived his life as if God was in control. And Nebuchadnezzar did not see that, and he lived his life for himself. What I want you to do right now, I want you to think of your various positions, your various circumstances. I want you to think of where you work, your family, the friends that you have, the school that you go to. I want you to think of the groups and the communities that you're a part of, what you do day in, day out. I want you to examine it, and I want you to ask the question, who is in control? Who is in control of my job, of my family? Who is in control of my finances? Who is in control of my friendships and my school? Who is in control of my church? Our sermon series is titled Standing Firm. And if we are to stand firm, if we are to be godly people and stand strong, we have to stand on a firm foundation. So we have to ask ourselves, what foundation is that going to be? Who is going to be ultimately in control? Is it going to be us, or will it God? Because I can promise you that God is a much stronger foundation than any kind of foundation we will ever be. So stand up with the understanding and the courage that God is in control. Know that whatever situation you're in, good or bad, that God is there. That whatever position God has appointed you to or has allowed you to take, God is there. And he's calling you to be a godly person. He's calling you to love him, to draw close to him. And he's calling you to do his will right there, right then. When you go home today, whenever you sit down with your family, whenever you go into work the next day, whenever you meet with your friends, whenever you go to school, I want you to ask yourself, who is in control? Who am I putting at the focus? Is it me? Or is it God? Thank you. Let's pray. Dear God, thank you for just the wonderful opportunity that we have here. Thank you for just everything that you've given us, for allowing us to be here in this place today, where we can come and we can worship you, or we can be alongside fellow believers and work to ever grow into the people that you're calling us to be. Help us to be more like you each and every day, to recognize that you are there and that you are in control of every situation and every position that we're in. I pray that you'd be with us this week, this month, as we're still at the beginning of a new year, that this would be one that's focused on you. Forgive us for where we failed, and continue to give us grace and the blessings that you pour out on us. And in your son's name, amen.